We're turning now to the arrest this weekend of reputed al-Qaeda operative and September the 11th mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in Pakistan. U.S. officials hope his arrest will lead to even more arrests, maybe even the capture of Osama bin Laden. Some information has reportedly been obtained from documents and computers seized in his apartment where he was staying in Rawalpindi, but much will depend on the information Mohammed provides them under interrogation. So what is the nature of this questioning, and how much information might come from it, and how reliable is this information? Larry Johnson is former deputy director of the Office of Counterterrorism at the U.S. Department of State. He's also worked at the Central Intelligence Agency. He's now CEO of Berg Associates, a consulting firm, and joins us by phone from Fort Lauderdale in Florida. If you have a question, by the way, give us a phone call at 800-989-8255 or send us email at totn@npr.org. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What's a realistic expectation for how much information can be obtained under interrogation from someone like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I think we're probably exaggerating the value of it or the benefit of this. Maybe what he has to say, 30% of it might be effective and stuff we'll want to act on, but no matter what he says at the end of the day, you've got to be able to go out and corroborate it. That means you've either got to find another human source who can verify it or some way to check it out through documents or phone records or actually get out into the field and find out if he did in fact know what he's talking about.
I guess nobody really expects that they're going to get arrested, but surely he's undergone some thought, some training about what to do if he's interrogated.
I doubt that. I don't think he has. And what even, you know, I've been through the training which teaches you to deal with this, and the bottom line lesson is anybody can be broken. You don't have to use torture. I don't think getting out the Hollywood version of, sticking snakes down people's throats or, you know, pulling out fingernails or hooking them up to batteries is just, you know, that's not effective. What you want to do ultimately is build rapport. And with this guy, you know, can use sleep deprivation. I think until, you know, new mothers who undergo sleep deprivation with new infants, until it's illegal for them to be without sleep, I don't see why we give, you know, guys involved with terrorism the right to have 8 hours of sleep a night. And when you do some sleep deprivation combined with standing in place and not getting great food, getting decent food, but just, you know, enough to keep you alive, at some point you can build rewards in there and say, look, if you cooperate, you know, you'll be able to get 6 hours straight of sleep. There's some disorienting you can do.
There is some urgency associated with the information. If, for example, he knows where Osama bin Laden is, this is obviously time urgent. People might be tempted to use other methods to get something like that.
Those other methods I don't think are effective. And, to use torture, when I talk about torture, I'm talking about using physical violence against somebody. They're going to confess to anything. You have people who confess to being the Pope at that point. And the goal is to get information that's valid and truthful where you don't have to waste a lot of time, energy, and resources running it to ground. And so, I don't really think there's so much urgency to this per se, because getting Khalid Sheikh Mohammed off the street is much better news than having bin Laden in custody, frankly. Because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he was the brains of the operations. He was the one planning, plotting, working with Ramzi Youssef back with the first World Trade Center bombing, helping him prepare that in 1992.
Our first caller is Maria, who's on the line with us from Seattle.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm really curious. I keep hearing on the news that he's been taken to another country, but that other country isn't ever disclosed. And I would suspect that he's been taken somewhere to be tortured, and yet it's not really being spelled out as such.
I would doubt that, because I can't emphasize enough. I mean, I've heard some people who've also been former government people make some really stupid comments about, oh, well, we need to get the battery cables out. It doesn't work. I mean, yeah, somebody will give you information, but it's not truthful information. What you want to find out is the truth. He's been taken, I think what I've heard is he's been taken to Diego Garcia at the military base that the U.S. has out there in the Indian Ocean.
This is a British-owned island in the middle of the Indian Ocean, in the middle of almost nowhere.
Right, and the reason we don't want to acknowledge where he is in part for the not to bring the host government that actually controls the territory under any pressure to say, well, he's on our territory, therefore we need to apply our laws. I think if we allowed him to be taken for torture, there's no guarantee you're going to get good information out of that.
Maria, you're still suspicious?
Yeah, I didn't quite understand why he couldn't be brought to the U.S. for interrogation.
Well, you don't want to bring him to the United States for interrogation simply because once you put him in the United States, he's going to be subject to U.S. judicial procedures. You want to keep him in a position where he can be treated under a potential military tribunal law. I mean, frankly, we are in a gray area with this because it used to be we'd like to get people rendered or extradited to the United States where charges could be brought and prosecutors would be able to build a case and present it in court. The problem is right now we're more concerned with trying to make sure we have as much information from this guy about where his other cohorts are, any operations that are in plan, and disrupt those and then worry about the prosecution and leave open the chance that he might be prosecuted like the folks who are down in Guantanamo under a military system as opposed to a civilian judicial process.
It's nice to hear that, but, you know, Maria's skepticism, it's we don't know where he is. We don't know what procedures are. It's all unknown.
No, that's true. I mean, I don't blame her for being skeptical, but knowing some of the people that I know who are involved with this process, you know, these are not guys sitting around saying, oh, let's figure out new and exotic means of torture. Again, the interrogation techniques that were used up on me going through CIA training, I wouldn't consider them torture. Were they uncomfortable? Sure. You know, I don't like standing in place for 36 hours. I don't like being sleep deprived. I don't like eating rice. It's a very bland diet. But, you know, I didn't starve. I had enough to drink. I didn't get enough sleep. And after a while, you know, I start saying, okay, look, I'll cooperate if you let me lay down and take a nap. Now, if you can start getting cooperation like that, but, you know, using actual physical force on people, I think their psychological techniques are much more effective because at the end of the day, you want to build rapport with this guy. You don't want to make him an enemy.
Maria, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now, is there a gray area between, I mean, is there a bright line? Does torture start somewhere?
Yeah, I think torture starts once you actually involve, where you are deliberately inflicting pain upon someone as opposed to letting nature take its course. In other words, depriving people of sleep is, we need to have natural sleep cycles to be fully functioning, and that's important for a healthy life. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to get information out of somebody and help affect their ability to make judgments, once you deprive them of sleep, they may make slip-ups and their judgment may not be as clear and they may say things that they otherwise would try to protect. I hear people talking about using drugs, and again, that led to a lot of ill-fated CIA experiments back in the 50s and 60s. They're always looking for that magic pill you could give somebody to tell the truth, and there was no such thing. So I think at the end of the day, we come back that, you know, this guy may be a terrorist, and he's admitted to his role in 9/11, but he's still at root a human being, and you've got to use your understanding of human motivation. This is not a religious zealot, by the way. This is a guy who very much lived a lot of the Playboy lifestyle while espousing the religious zealotry. So he's a little bit of a dichotomy.
It's interesting you said that you didn't think he had been trained to resist interrogation. How come?
While looking at what I've seen from the Al-Qaeda training camps, they had some fairly, I would call it entry-level 101 for intelligence training and such. And it's the kind of thing you would pick up in spy novels, but not real in-depth preparation because I don't think they anticipated actually being caught.
Larry Johnson, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, Neil.
Larry Johnson, formerly with the Central Intelligence Agency and the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department, and he's now the CEO of Berg Associates. He spoke with us by phone from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.